It is time to free Oscar Lopez Rivera.
WBEI 99.5 FM. That is Rene from Calle 13 giving us a quick PSA on the mobilization that is planned for May 30th here in New York City, calling for the liberation of Oscar Lopez Rivera.
Peace, y'all. We gonna be out?
We gonna be out. We gonna be out. And we gonna be in. We saying peace to the fam. Peace to everybody. This is Rebel Diaz Radio. We have making sure again that we are pledging for to keep this radio station alive and to keep the sounds going. And so we want to make sure that you tune in to WBA 99.5 FM. If you want to make a pledge, you can call 212-209-2950. I'm really happy I memorized that. 212-209-2950. I'm going to get a number out one more time. 212-209-2950. Make sure you call and pledge in. This radio station is for the 99%. We are the voice of the people here, and we want to make sure that this is still out and about. And then we hear.
Necesitamos chavo para los biles.
Necesitamos chavo para los biles. So ya tú sabes, dinero, dinerito, dinerito.
Pa. Free Oscar Lopez. We out.
Peace, love. Out here. Huh?
And it is 2 minutes after midnight. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. Ordinarily, you would be hearing Kathy Davis at this hour, but for the beginning of our fun drive, a very special three-hour edition of Hour of the Wolf.
With a baby.
With a the baby's here?
The baby is here. And we also have a youngster. Thank you very much. You're here all night.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI New York. My name is Jim Freund. This is usually a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, imagination, and stuff like that there. My guest this morning will be Dan Persons. We're going to be discussing the new movies and the newer movies. Stay tuned.
Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. Okay, this one is going to be pretty short. Avengers Age of Ultron is an entertaining big-budget superhero film, and that's all it is. There you go. Thank you for listening. No, let's delve into this a bit more. Maybe make this a little longer, because this is interesting. The big criticism of the Marvel superhero films, particularly the ones put out by the Disney-owned Marvel Studios, is that they all have the same plot. We've addressed this before, and it's true. It's always bad guy has some widget that will unleash havoc, leading to a final act that's mostly computer animation with a smattering of the live actors, the people we're essentially paying our money to see, thrown in. This is understandable. These are comic book movies, after all, and comic books have been cranking out this same formula issue after issue for, like, what, 3/4 of a century? Something like that. So it falls to what a director can do within this structure and with the personalities of the heroes being dealt with. This includes the first very good Avengers film, which was that havoc-wreaking widget plotline, but had the virtue of Joss Whedon writing along with Zack Penn and also him directing, bringing his unique wit and skill with character interaction to this big-screen alliance of Marvel heroes. Whedon does the same thing with Age of Ultron, but that's the problem. It's the same film with a psychotic android, Ultron, voiced by James Spader, swapped in for Tom Hiddleston's Loki from the previous film. Because of that, the bad guy is more dryly sarcastic than Royal Shakespeare Company dramatic, and I like that. Ultron is a cool villain with some wonderfully expressive computer animation. But otherwise, it's as if Whedon took the template from the first film and plunked it down into this one, all the way to replicating the standout beats from the first film. You like the way Hulk responded to the villain in Avengers? Here it is again. You were moved by the untimely death of a character. You're covered here. The problem is, without the energy that was generated from all these characters sparking off each other for the first time, it's a more by-the-numbers kind of exercise. Whedon tries to get the sparks going again, but despite a willing cast, Robert Downey Jr. is back as Tony Stark slash Iron Man, Scarlett Johansson is Natasha Romanoff slash Black Widow, Mark Ruffalo is Bruce Banner slash Hulk, Jeremy Renner is Clint Barton slash Hawkeye, Chris Evans is Steve Rogers slash Captain America, and Chris Hemsworth is Thor, and by the way, roof. It's not working this time. Marvel needs to think about this. Quite a few people who have been following the Marvel Cinematic Universe long ago had their tolerance threshold crossed with this kind of repetition. My forbearances may be higher, although there are quite a few of the Marvel films that tested it, Thor films being primary culprits. But when even Joss Whedon can't mask the formulaic nature of these exercises, it may be time to reevaluate the strategy. There's one more Marvel film scheduled this year, Ant-Man, and that's good. A glut of releases with the same cookie-cutter plot like we got last year doesn't do the MCU any favors. If you're not going to think that maybe, just maybe, a different plot might be nice, at least give us a breather so that we're less prone to go, God, this again? I will say this for Avengers Age of Ultron. I wasn't squirming in my seat. Joss Whedon is still Joss Whedon, even repeating himself, and so there's more than enough wit, invention, and snap in how the characters play off each other to make this a decent return on your ticket investment. The over-reliance on CG does take its toll. Too many of the action scenes devolve into digital hash on the screen. Bigger is not better if it's just an undifferentiated mess with explosions. Regardless, I had fun with Avengers Age of Ultron. I had fun and then pretty much disposed of it the second I walked out of the theater. That couldn't be said for the first installment, and it should never be said of a film that Joss Whedon is involved with. I have too much love for the guy to want to consider any of his works non-essential. I'm Dan Persons. Remember, we are archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website, so check out what you missed by going to mightymoviepodcast.com.
Okay, well, oh yeah, you really have to pot this thing up all the way. Well, welcome, everybody. It's not new to WBAI listeners. Hey, Max, where do I see levels?
You don't see them?
Oh, you mean on that board? I've got to turn all the way over there, which levels, puts me off mic.
That's all the levels you're used to being off
mic. Yeah, well, yeah. I was totally off mic during the last New York Review of Science Fiction readings because she has a directional microphone, not an... I expect cardioids wherever I go. This isn't a cardioid, is it? Let's see. Excuse me, everybody. I hope you like the windscreen sound. No, it's a Shure. I'm sure it's a Shure. But it doesn't mean whether it's directional or cardioid or what. It's good. Well, if it were cardioid, then the smart place to put it would be over here so I can look at the... What's this device?
That's your headphone volume.
Oh, okay. Which one for the headphone? It's that me, yes. Okay.
The other two we should mark because I never know which one to turn up and down.
Yeah, and this pot over here should be Dan. Say, oh, yes, you're right. Feedback. Say hi, Dan.
Hello, peoples.
Okay, well, he didn't say hi, Dan. He said hello, peoples. But he's on the air. And when he goes on the air, yes, there is definite tinnitus.
Well, Tony said he had it adjusted, but somebody probably played with it. And he's probably right. There's no way to lock the settings on this.
Yeah, right. Mixer. Yeah. So we are, I will describe it to you, and I'll shoot you an Instagram of it. I'll shoot everybody an Instagram. There we go. Let's put the cups all over. Ooh, we can do, like, you know, the David Letterman thing.
Just beware that the ants
don't... Oh, dear. Well, that was an empty cup anyway. But what I need are the pencils. Okay, so anyway, this is just a room. That's all it is. Good night, Max.
Would you like the door closed?
No, it's horribly warm in here. And the only person going to be coming in, theoretically, is Lister.
Yeah. Well, I'm not locking the door on the way out. So
good.
Good.
Okay. Now you've just told everybody, but that's okay. They can't get in through the downstairs. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
So
sounds like fun over there.
Well, you see, there were all these people in here earlier pitching their hearts out and stuff. And so my training for this place using a what looks like a Mackie It says Allen and Heath, but looks to me sort of like a Mackie console and a rack of a couple of CD players and stuff, making the room very warm in just an ordinary room of a Brooklyn tenement. Mm. And with an open door, which doesn't matter so much because there's no soundproofing here anyway. What, Max?
That's your air vent right here.
Yeah, right, yes. There's a next room. Over.
This is your soundproofing.
Yes, there's boxes. There's an air vent in the next room, and they didn't put a box there so air could come in.
By the way, you know, you were telling me about the equipment you had there, and when I was contacted to get me online for the show, it was, I guess that's Max.
That was Max, yes. You know Max.
That was Max. And I was anticipating that I was going to be hearing you, and so when I heard Max's voice, I said, oh, boy, something is really going wrong over there.
Yeah, well, when you put Max on the air, you can assume that something... No, it's not true.
No, no, he's a nice guy.
But... he's a wonderful guy. And but no, I mean, he was basically easing me in because he had to be over. There's not a lot of room behind the console here. And, I mean, and unless I am practically filleting the mic, I'm not really on mic. So, and if I turn my head to look at the console, I go off mic. But according to Max, I do that all of the time anyway. I wanted to take exception, minor exception, with your Avengers review.
Go ahead.
There's one film that was not cookie cutter between during MCU number 2, and that was Guardians.
No, it was the same thing. It was the widget that everybody had to get, and at the end there was the mass conflagration with the tons of CG computer animation. It is the same, but it was off planet,
so that helped a lot.
You know, in my review, and I had actually listened to it recently, it's what I said, and it's true about all these films in the MCU, is that...
MCU, for listeners, by the way, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I saw right. Chris Claremont last week, and I mentioned the MCU. He had no idea what I was referring to.
I think the MCU was also the bad guy computer in Tron, wasn't it?
The master control unit, absolutely. Because you have that in every computer. But it stands for David Warner.
Yeah. But,
who's always the bad guy? David Warner is always the bad guy.
What I did say, though, in my review of Guardians, and this holds true for the MCU, is that it's not the destination, it's the journey.
Mm.
And so it's what I was saying in this review. It falls to the director that you get and the stars that you get and what they can bring to this, because it's been the same plot film after film. So it's Joss Whedon bringing his intelligence and wit to the proceedings, or Robert Downey Jr. bringing his own particular skills, and this strictly speaking isn't MCU, but since it is Marvel, and since they also have sort of been mirroring this as well, Bryan Singer,
yeah,
you know, doing what he can do.
Yeah, well, it's been it's been very interesting seeing the directors they bring in. They've been bringing in off-the-wall, fun, low-key, no pun intended, directors, relatively speaking. And they've really taken chances on that, which, you know, tries to give some of the movies a lot of fun. Even Whedon, really, his only, you know, major film to date, when he did the first Avengers film, was Serenity.
Yes, that's true.
People forget he was not a movie director. I think Age of Ultron, including his wonderful Not All's Well, Not As You Like It, they all have the same title as Shakespeare comedies. The one with Hero and what's his name? At any rate, his wonderful version of that Shakespeare movie that he shot in his own house.
As You Like It, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't As You Like It. All's Well That Ends Well.
Yeah, okay.
It was All's Well That Ends Well. That's the problem, is the names are sort of meaningless and flow into one another, even though the stories are so different. But that makes Age of Ultron, I think, his fourth movie. That's all. And it makes the last Avengers film merely his, actually, his third, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
So Branagh doing one, he was sort of like the big name.
What did Branagh do? Which one?
Thor.
Was Thor. Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. And the Thor ones have been the ones that have rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, the Thor 1 and Thor 2 had completely different directors. My problem is a lot of people really like Captain America 2. And Captain America 2, now here's what I did. About starting 3 months ago, I watched the entire MCU in order.
Ah.
I had seen every film before.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been watching S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter, but now I'm watching them in order and looking for what Kevin Feige calls the crumbs. That each movie stands on its own, but there will be a crumb that goes from one film to another to another.
Right, yeah, that eventually leads up to, and what do they call it? I think they call it like there's the first wave.
There's MCU 1, MCU 2.
Right.
And we are about to, with Ant-Man.
We're entering into MCU 3.
Yeah. If people go to the Wikipedia site, it breaks it all down.
Mm.
And it's pretty simple. But it's sort of fun to watch them. I'm not counting the Hulk movies. Because they didn't know that they were going to be doing this whole thing at the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, the X-Men films are totally divorced and unrelated. And according to Chris Claremont, never will they meet.
By legal mandate.
Well, legal mandates change.
It's true.
Contracts expire, legal mandates change, and I was saying, well, certainly, you know, by 2020, and Chris was just going, nope, never going to happen. Fox and Disney are not going to collaborate on these mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's sort of hard to tell the difference between what they're doing with the Inhumans,
right,
versus the X-Men,
mutants. But that's the thing. I mean, this is one of the contractual things that I know about. And there was a whole big deal when X-Men: Days of Future Past was being filmed because Bryan Singer had announced that he was using Quicksilver,
mm-hmm.
and of course, Quicksilver shows up in this film as well, and there was a little bit of a jurisdictional dispute.
Yeah, but it was actually easily solved by having to do with the fact that he had been in both comics.
And it was
such a minor role.
Yeah, it was solved legally, I think, or perhaps
diplomatically might be a better word.
Diplomatically. By letting Disney put in one of the codas, it was actually a coda for, I think it was for Age of Ultron. but I can't quite remember what the coda was.
Yeah, but there's only a mid-finale. Now, I think everybody should stay to every movie they ever see, no matter what, until the lights come on in the theater. Having said that, in Age of Ultron, even though I haven't seen it, I understand there's a mid-outro moment, but there's no, like...
No tag.
No shawarma. There's no shawarma at the end of this film.
No shawarma, at least not the one that I saw. Now, it's always possible that there are different prints going to different theaters.
So far, nobody has reported one.
Yeah.
And
but I did not.
I'm one of the very, very few people that I remember, and I'm not even going to mention this on the air, I remember a tag at the end of Avengers 1, an additional one, besides the shawarma and the midway through one. Instead of the midway through one that they have now, which is, what's his name, with the toothy grin, who appears in Guardians, the big bad there, I saw a different midway.
Interesting. What was it? Do you remember?
I remember very, very well, and everybody tells me it doesn't exist, and so for legal reasons, I'll tell you only off the air.
Okay. I'm not sure what legal...
I will tell you this. It involves plot lines that came along later in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
And I knew those plot lines were coming up. And Barbara, my partner, said, wait a minute, we saw something about this, didn't we? And then one other person I know saw it as well. So I'm not completely crazy, but everybody else in the world says, no, you didn't see that. It doesn't exist. It never existed.
I made the mistake with the first Avengers of leaving after the first coda.
I
saw the coda, and now I can go. And, yeah.
The film ain't over until the fat usher has cleaned the aisles.
Yeah.
When the house lights come up is when I leave.
Yeah. I dearly regret missing the shawarma.
I mean, I don't care if it's a Barbara Stanwyck film. It doesn't matter. I stay through the end of the credits. I actually noticed them. First time I ever got a real big payoff for it that I recall was, was it The Adventures of Young Sherlock Holmes? The Barry Levinson film? Where Pixar...
Are you there? Because I can no longer hear you.
I am here. Can you not hear me?
I think we just dropped out.
Ooh, okay.
Are you there?
Am here, yes.
Okay, sorry. Were you able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
You've been on all this time.
Huh? Okay, so I know, but I'll let you know if you drop out again.
Okay. I dropped out many years ago. But I tuned in and dropped out. So I was just saying that I had the one of the very first Easter eggs in movies that I recall was in Young Sherlock or The Adventures of Young Sherlock Holmes or whatever, the Barry Levinson movie.
Right, yeah.
Where at the very end we see Moriarty, who's supposed to be dead, checking into a hotel. They never did do a sequel to that. It wasn't a bad film, and it was memorable for Pixar doing...
That was essentially their big screen debut.
That's correct. Before they did the Genesis machine...
Mm-hmm.
They did the medieval skeleton, armed skeleton, and they specifically chose that as a nod to Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah. I remember that. You know, I want to say this. You know, you're talking about a moral obligation to stay through the credits. Let me just...
Not a moral, an entertainment obligation.
Well, let me put it this way, then. These credit rolls, particularly for the big-budget films, run 5 to 7 minutes now. And if I sit through something that's been an absolute dog, soon as those, that role starts, and we're talking about after whatever sort of elaborate CG thing they use for the above the title credits.
Well, if it's once a dog, it barks.
Once the regular credit roll starts, I figure, okay, I've done my time. This is early parole.
I can appreciate that for movies that you don't care for. That, you know, then why bother? But I am as a general movie fan, whether I'm watching it on Turner Classic Movies or I'm at a revival house like the Thalia or wherever, I stay till the end of the film. And if they are, and if the people in front of me are standing up blocking me, I ask them to please move. I not only sit through the credits, I read them.
Well, that's what I do too. And I mean, that's if I really love a film, if I've enjoyed a film, I will sit through the credits no matter how long they are. And it's because I want to read the credits because, you know, in that entire mass, there are little bits and pieces that you can glean.
And, you know, you watch movies and you see older, what are now older films and or the, now are new films and will be older films. And you're going, oh, my God, that's an all-star cast. And the answer is yes. And nobody had heard of them at the time this movie came out. And look who they have, you know, sweeping the floor. In such and such a film. Oh, my God, that's, you know, major star. Yeah.
Or you get to go, wait a minute, Quentin Tarantino wrote this?
Yeah. Well, that you should get at the front. Or you get relatively early at the back. But I, you know. The way the Marvel movies work is that they give you the first break after the entire cast list.
Right.
And then they give you the next break, usually post all credits, which means that they've told you all the music rights.
Right.
And then
you get all the logos. You get your little Panavision logo, your Technicolor logo.
Yeah, and don't forget SAG-AFTRA. Important to them.
Dolby Atmos.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And once you're done, and then there's a little tiny print after that, including, you know, this documentary was totally fictional or something like that. At that point, you get the little capper at the end on some films. And there's no doubt websites that will tell you every single one that has some Easter egg. You know, something to search for.
Oh, yeah.
Or another. Let me tell listeners, by the way, that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. I'm not going to trust the clock on the computer. But according to Android, or Verizon anyway, it is 12:31 in New York City. And
in Philadelphia time, it's 12:31 as well.
Ooh, what a coincidence. Yeah, but Philadelphia time, life seems slower.
You know, I haven't encountered that quite yet. Several people have said to me, oh, well, they do things much slower in Philadelphia. I haven't quite.
Until you go visit the James Joyce archives, you know?
Maybe.
Which are there?
Probably everything else.
They're at the Franklin.
Seems to be here. The city seems to be laid out park, museum, church. So.
I like museums. I like parks.
Oh, yeah. I love museums, too. But, wow, they've got a lot of them here.
Yeah, but it's still not as many as New York.
Yeah.
They're just more prominent there, but there's so many micro museums in New York.
What's really weird is there aren't a lot of movie theaters here. I've been looking for the movie theaters, and I don't know, three, maybe four. something like that.
Yeah, there are also probably a lot of more private movie festivals, though.
Yeah. There are a few.
And I'm sure that a lot of the museums show festivals. Yeah. Don't. Oh, this computer is trying to upgrade stuff. While I am in the middle of my show, an antivirus scanner wants to say, I'll take over your show. So anyhow, I was going to tell listeners that, A, if we sound different, it's because of our... No, if we sound different, we are in our new facility at 388 Atlantic Avenue. We do not yet have a studio. We are in a room. And in that room, we have three mics and a small, not broadcast mixing board, but a mixing board like you would do an album on. We have a single turntable that probably, you know, be lucky if it does 45s. I doubt it. Two CD players. Oh, there's a thing for delay, which doesn't matter. We have one phone, which means that I can have Dan on the air, but while I have Dan on the air, I cannot take incoming calls. And yet I am very, very happy not to be making the trip up to City College. Not because I didn't like the environs in Harlem. They were actually rather charming. And the security staff were amazingly nice people. But here, just heard a truck on Atlantic Avenue, on the other hand. So this is a fund drive, okay? And it is a fund drive to turn the room in which we're saving a lot of money. We're no longer paying rent for both a management office and a separate studio, which were close to the same money. So we've cut that in half by consolidating. Unfortunately, as I said, we're in a room. We need to turn this into a studio. To do that, we need your brains, money. And in order to get your money, we need you to pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2950. But first, let me tell you how much to give. Okay, yeah, $25 will make you a subscriber. Fine, good. We're going for $60. If you pledge $60, you can get... You heard the review at the beginning of the show. How would you like to have all the ones that we have ever had on Hour of the Wolf? And that would be taking a look at the thumb drive I brought with me here. I believe you started with Iron Man 3, as a matter of fact.
I think so.
Yeah.
I was digging up my archives, and I haven't done
In 2013,
yet.
May 9th.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's right. Sounds right.
Yeah, so that's almost exactly 2 years. And before you was Genevieve Valentine. She only did about 7 or 8 reviews. And some of those are really interesting and really weird because I guarantee most of the people listening have never heard of any of those movies. And the value, why are you offering me... old movie reviews, because, you know, to me, an old movie, first of all, is the stuff that I catch on Turner Classic Movies. You know, from the 60s, I remember that. You know, that's old. You know, it's from my childhood, more or less. I didn't watch that many movies in the 50s. I was watching Howdy Doody. And movies don't age, and if they do, there's an issue. And so we have 2 years of reviews. Let me see if I hit Control-A. How many? We have 68 reviews. that Dan has done. And then there's about another about 75 reviews in their entirety. And we will send you a CD with all of these reviews when you pay your pledge to WBAI. And that pledge should be $60. And, you know what? It's actually a bit fewer than that because I see I've got a couple of duplicates, which I'm about to delete.
By the way, at least according to my records here, it seems like I started with Evil Dead. There were three reviews before Iron Man 3.
Well, then send them to me, would you?
Oh, okay. No props.
So that I can include them here. And I'm finding a couple of duplicates because there are some that I equalized and kept the original version plus the equalized version. But all things being equalized, that is what we will give listeners. Is this cleaned up version, and like The King and the Mockingbird has two versions. So that's a wonderful movie that nobody here listening has probably seen. Oh, and there's an extra one for The Beast. I'm actually editing. Sorry?
I've done, what, something like 6 hours worth of content for you?
It's about, yes, it's just about 6 hours.
Okay, we need to talk about compensation, mister.
Thank you. You just got your I'll tell you what, I'll give you double what I get here.
Okay, that sounds fine.
Yeah.
Deal.
Yeah, I don't even have any cards. But what we do, the compensation that we need is compensation from listeners who understand. This is, given my history at WBAI, which began in 1967, folks, given my history, at that point we were at 30 East 39th Street. We then moved to 62nd Street and first from there to 505 8th Avenue to 120 Wall Street to CCNY. This space at 388 Atlantic is my sixth WBAI. And we were at none of the places that I cited for less than a few years. And I'm not counting some small interim places that, come to think of it, I was in that actually had less equipment and less studios than the one we are in here right now. But this is to become our home, and I've got to say, the building is really, really, really nice. And the owner of the building is a huge supporter of WBAI, which is one of the reasons that we are able to be here. By no small coincidence, the last three New York Review of Science Fiction readings have been held downstairs, although they have nothing to do with WBAI. And they were, I got to tell you, last Tuesday nights, that's two nights ago, with N.K. Jemisin and Cherie Renee Thomas, went fabulously. And if people want to see it, or the one from the week before with Rob Sherman of Doctor Who famedom, he wrote the episode for Doctor Who called Dalek. He was the first person in, 16 years to put a Dalek on TV. Because there was the interregnum, the years in which Doctor Who was not on television. There were radio stories in between in which they came up with such things that I do not count, that Rob very much does, such as the Time Wars and things like that. And Rob thinks that he's actually responsible for the name, the Time Wars, and I wouldn't doubt it. So, but as far as television is concerned, he wrote that fine episode with Chris Eccleston, Dalek, and he's won X-Men World Fantasy Awards and this and that. He's a fine writer. He's a good playwright. He has a play running off-Broadway right now that people should race out and go see. The point is, if you go to livestream.com, or if you like to join one of my groups on Facebook, which is the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, NYRSF, it's all free, and click on the link, you can actually watch the reading as produced for video by Terrence Taylor, and you can see it through, and we have three cameras set up. We have camera one, which gets, you know, an over-the-shoulder, camera two, which gets a slightly different angle, camera three pulls in the whole audience, and then you can move one and preview and all that, and if you have a really professional video mixer, as we have in Terrence Taylor, who's worked for PBS in various places for over 30 years, you end up with a dynamite thing. Well, that's just the beginning. That's me. That's the New York Review.
You know, with Letterman retiring, you can probably get the monkey cam now.
Well, as a, yes, exactly. But there are plans for WBAI to be doing a comedy club.
Ah.
And I have opened conversation with our station manager about a music series, basically a revival of the WBAI Free Music Store. There's a lot we can do with this space. This can be our new home, but in order for us to do any of what I just named, we must survive. And in order for us to survive here at listener-sponsored WBAI, and I did warn you, Dan, that this show would be half pitching and half chatting. Mm-hmm. This is the pitching part.
Okay.
We need people to call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Just become a member of WBAI, $25, or to get the CD with the MP3s. It won't be a normal throw it into your drive and it plays CD, but most CDs today actually will just start playing MP3s.
Mm-hmm.
We will give you all those reviews and the ones that preceded Dan with Genevieve Valentine for a pledge of $60, which is not a lot. I was talking with the station manager earlier today, and he said, oh, let's think $90 or $75. And I said, let's price it to move, $60. He said, okay, do $60, price it to move. And that's exactly what we're doing. These things are running out. Well, actually, I haven't burned the master CD that they'll use yet, because I also want to add a few other things to this to fill out the CD. But we're going to produce it. It will be in the hands of the people who mail these things out by Friday. And we need you, the listeners, to become the listener sponsors, to call now and pledge now. Let me just mention, this is not just to keep WBAI broadcasting and not just to build a studio over this room. I sort of get the impression of the time machine, the George Pal time machine, where Rod Taylor is just sitting in the machine and all of a sudden the roof appears and disappears over his head. We need a studio to appear over my head. You know, we're lucky it's the middle of the night. I've heard motorcycle groups, not gangs, groups. I don't think it's a person under 65 on one of those things. motorcycle clubs going up and down Atlantic Avenue, and you can hear them as well. In the middle of a reading of a short story, it may not be your choice, or in the middle of the news or whatever. We need to rebuild WBAI, and in essence, we have torn it down, brought it back to its basics, and from here, we are going to rebuild. We need you to be a part of that rebuilding by calling 212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. And let me mention very, very selfishly that this not only goes to show your concern for WBAI, but it also helps to go and prove that Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program in which we bring you some of the best, newest and traditional people from the world of speculative fiction on the air, such as we had Celeste Rita Baker on the air a few weeks ago, and in the last year, I just throw out the names, Kim Stanley Robinson, recordings with Frank Herbert. I have to find the one with Clifford D. Simak. That's a good one to broadcast. Ursula K. Le Guin, Harlan Ellison, so on and so forth. These are shows that, with people reading, Rick Bowes, of course, Daniel Jose Older, we want you to hear these voices. And I know that the very first thing you say is, well, I don't read science fiction. That's all right. Good. We'll introduce you to the good stuff. And you'll hear it and you'll say, gee, I didn't know that was science fiction. Maybe I like it after all. This is what often happens. So that's what Hour of the Wolf is here to bring you. We also go off on occasional tangents, such as this morning, where we're going to, where we are discussing and will be discussing the upcoming summer movies and media. But for us to stay on the air, for Hour of the Wolf to stay on the air and maybe even to improve its time slot, we need you to show your support by dialing 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. There's probably a way for me to know how many people are calling, but I'm not sure what it is. Right now, I'm taking it on faith that we are actually on the air. Because Dan and I are just talking into a telephone, you know?
But I do treasure these moments I have with you.
Well, I'm glad, because they're good. So, aside from the, I think we've sort of built the MCU, unless you want to discuss the television version. I watched last night's, Tuesday night's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. today.
Yeah.
And there's like an Ultron spoiler right at the beginning of the TV show.
Yeah, they are really counting on the fact that anybody who cares about this has already seen the movie the first weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm waiting to not have the screamers in the audience and the jackasses and folk like that. I will get into the car and I will drive to some red state area like Staten Island. Mm. And I will see it in a local large theater. By the way, is it 3D or anything?
It is 3D, yes.
Yeah, I will see if I can. Is there any way to see it IMAX 2D?
I'm not sure about that. I will tell you that from my experience, the 3D in this film is not essential. You can live without it.
I can only think of three movies in which it is essential. And
Gravity,
I can't think of the third
one.
Film. I'm sorry, say again?
Gravity would be one.
Yes, thank you. That's the third film that I couldn't remember. Gravity would be one. My second one, I'll give you a clue, is a documentary.
The Werner Herzog?
Absolutely. The Werner Herzog, just cut out the parts where he's talking.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant movie.
The whole part is just to build up for, what is it, I think the 20-minute sequence in the cave.
Yeah, that's actually a good half hour in the cave, and then they repeat it. But that is worth the price of admission.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And the first one, I shall venture a guess and say Avatar.
No.
Really? Okay.
No, I liked Avatar. It was a great roller coaster ride, but it didn't do a lot for me. That's not the film.
Which would it be then?
It's a four-letter word.
That you can say on air, I presume.
Yeah. Hugo.
Oh, Hugo. Interesting. Interesting. But
when
Scorsese
made Hugo, starting with that long, long shot through all of Paris and then right into the old station and you're swooping through Paris, every single shot of that movie, going through Clockworks, going through this, going through that, he staged every shot of that film to have depth. Deep, deep depth. You can watch it in 2D and enjoy it, and you can even appreciate his effort of 3D in the watching it on a nice 2D screen. But seeing that movie in 3D, it's like you see this guy who is a master of cinema saying, and who uses generally film, that is to say, not digital, making a digital movie, doing it in 3D, and saying, oh, you people are into 3D now. Well, let me show you how it's done. And he done it. Mm-hmm. And that's aside from the fact that, and I would venture to say that while it's not genre, it's not science fiction or fantasy, that it's what they would call an affiliated film.
We had an argument about that when we covered the film on the Cine Fantastique Spotlight, the old podcast, about whether it was genre or not. And I was leaning more towards it actually being regarded as genre just because the environment, the entire mise-en-scene, is a heightened and non-realistic environment. It exists, I think, in a fantasy world. It deals with actual people and an actual person.
And let's give away the spoiler. It's about the first science fiction movie maker.
Yes, Georges Méliès.
Méliès. How I've always pronounced it, and by people who know, I have not been corrected, so I'll stick with Méliès. And that's actually close to what they say in the film when they finally reveal.
Yeah.
I mean, his name is really Ben Kingsley. But so there are beautiful fantasy sequences in that movie. I agree with you. It has the feel of a good fantasy shoot throughout.
Yes.
It feels genre. And yes, the fact that it is about Méliès and about definitely related to the journey of From the Earth to the Moon, that famous, famous movie with the dancing girls putting the cannon in and the people going to the moon and in the cannonball and all that, the bullet. And how that is done and the reveal of that. One of the great moments in cinema is when Méliès pulls back the curtain and shows his old movies. And he goes from the old Méliès to the young. And actually, by the way, when they go to the young and they show that, that's not Ben Kingsley. That's,
oh, no?
No, it isn't. That's Méliès.
Ah, okay.
They don't morph it or anything. It's done with a very interesting technique that you don't often see in CGI movies. It's called acting. Which is another reason why I love that movie. But that is actually my number one really Odyssey in 3D movie. Gravity is number two.
Really? Gravity would be number one for me. Gravity
They're a close tie.
I would say, well, the thing about Gravity is I look at it as, you know, if you want to look at it that way, the killer app for not just...
That's a very good way to put it, yeah.
Well, it's that thing, but not just 3D for 3D IMAX films. It's the film that really, if you want to see it in the best way possible, you need to see it on an IMAX screen and ideally a huge IMAX screen in 3D.
I have to say that huge IMAX screens impress me more than 3D movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw, what was it, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol on a huge IMAX screen, not in 3D. And it was just as thrilling.
Yeah.
You still get the vertigo. You still got the feeling. I liked it.
Right. But I would say in the case of Gravity, it becomes... The problem with 3D is that it's still very much feels just like a gimmick. It's a disposable thing, except I think... With gravity, it becomes an actual tool. It becomes an actual part of the storytelling. It's one of the things that is employed to convey the story, and I think it's an important element in it. But films that actually do that with 3D are few and far between, and you can probably count all the films that where you can say the 3D is essential on one hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would go along with that, but you see, and that was the thing about Avatar. Avatar was an excellent experience, not an excellent movie. Oh, you're breaking up. Okay, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, but your phone is breaking up. Are you a little bit away from the phone base? Okay, we're going to give Dan a chance. And while he's doing that, since it's basically 1 o'clock, let me refresh people's memories that they are tuned to WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM, and over WBAI.org. How you doing over there, Dan?
I'm here.
I'm
staying.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I am not getting you. You sound like a Firesign Theater routine. Are you hearing me?
I am hearing you.
Okay, can you just give me a yes or a no on art? Can you hear me? Okay, not coming through. So we are not getting a good connection here. And, you know, Max left after... You know, he basically showed me how to dial a phone number. And, gee, I've forgotten half of it. Do you want me to try to call you back? Okay. Okay, I can hear intermittent stuff on your end. I have to assume, actually, Dan, that this problem is with your phone. And I okay, and I'm not understanding. I'm hearing that you're talking, but I am not understanding a single word of it. Say again. Yeah, no, it ain't happening for me, I'm afraid. I think... Should I call you at one of your other numbers? If you can keep your answers to single syllables, I will be able to understand you better. That didn't work. Try it again.
Call me at 215.
The Skype number, did you say? I hear the something number. Say that word again.
E-E.
That's all I'm hearing is E-E. I got mobile, home, Skype, and home. Google. Home?
Home.
Okay, I will try you at your home number. So we'll take you off the air for now.
Okay.
And let's see. So that's off. I have turned off his mic. Bear with us, people. I mean, that's the whole point. And while I'm doing this, you aren't here on the phone, are you, Dan? No, I'm not getting a dial tone either. But there's probably a trick. This is just your standard old-style phone. So, it's even got a dial pulse. What do you know? Okay, there we go. Hanging up. Am I getting a dial tone on this? I am not. Darn it. Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Oh, my God. You're there.
Yes, I am here. I'm still on Skype. I can hear you now, okay?
Okay. And now you're... Oh, you were on Skype, were you?
Yes, I was.
Okay, and that explains the breakup.
Oh, possibly.
Not possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, again, I'm a computer person. I was thinking, gee, that really sounds like a digital breakup. Because we could hear your voice. So you're there now, right?
Yeah, and I can hear you fine. I'm moving my head about, and there doesn't seem to be any problem, so I don't think it's the headset.
No. It's not the headset. It's the wonderful world of VoIP. And people that love their VoIP should be aware of this. It's different from, you know, getting your phone number through your normal provider. This is an issue of it happens a little less with Google Voice, but it does happen. It certainly happens with Skype. So it's happened to me a lot with Skype. The biggest problem I've had with Skype is delay, lag. So I will say something like, hello, and then there'll be like a 2-second silence, and then the person will say hello back to me, mm-hmm. by which time I've gone on to the next subject. So where were we? I think I was still going on about Hugo.
We were going on about Hugo. We were talking, I think I was talking about which films best use 3D.
Yeah, and I was saying why, I thought Avatar used it exceedingly well, but was totally disposable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after you've seen Avatar, it's a wonderful roller coaster ride, and when you're off of it, it's time to do something more fulfilling.
Yeah.
It did, however, set a standard for roller coaster rides.
Mm-hmm. And for 3D, that was the film that made everybody go, oh, it's 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, and it did a...
Studio head.
Yeah.
Even the films that didn't really need to be in 3D.
As most of them don't. A few animated films occasionally work, but even... Oh, what's the Neil Gaiman film... With Coraline.
Coraline
has like 30 seconds of some of the most incredible 3D moments in it.
Except that the fact that...
Including, by the way, at the very end of the closing credits.
Yeah. The fact that they use actual physical puppets. The 3D actually enhances the tactility.
Yeah.
That's a word of that. So I actually appreciated the 3D on Coraline more than even with CG animated films, which you can say sort of replicates the feel of stop motion, but with the computer generated.
I'm Dan Perth, reviewer.
Sorry, hold on. Let me kill that. That was
Giants,
not
when you come to think
on.
About it, are just plain inconvenient. They're
yes, they are, but I disagree
they
with
that. They
certainly
are.
They certainly
are. It's about time somebody took a stand.
As it were. Yes, I was rolling the mouse up and down, and it ended up in the woods.
Yes.
And it was decrying the insignificant use of Francis de La Tour, which is the one thing that you and I really agreed on about that movie.
Right. Which interestingly enough, was I think the last time I was actually on the show was in the week following it.
Where I got a chance to disagree with you on that one. And I love that movie. I mean,
you've dropped out again.
Okay, so I am here. So this is your Skype.
Yeah.
What I suggest you may want to do is if you have another internet device near you, like an iPhone or something like that, put it off to the side so when I drop out, you can hear me.
Let me... In other words, put the live feed on that other device.
We're at WBAI.org.
Right. Let me. I was actually about to do that.
Hold on. I mean, the only problem with that is that we're on delay.
Yeah. Let me see though if I can get that going.
Because even if we drop out, but while you get that going, I will pitch, I will talk, and all will be all right. Because in this time that we are setting up and going through these very obvious growing pains, which I have absolutely no problems letting you good folk at home hear what these issues are, the whole point is that we have moved. We are now in a new location, what will hopefully be a new long-term home, not a Band-Aid like the move to CCNY was, and an appropriate place in a lovely, lovely community on Atlantic Avenue. And what we don't have is working equipment and studios. We have people who are working feverishly, and I mean that some of them are, you know, getting ill. They're working hard and hard to make this happen. But to make this happen, the station needs money. We are still sending our phone lines to the Empire State Building. We have to pay the monthly rent there. We are paying now a far more reasonable rent than we were before, and only one instead of two for our management and studio space. But it still comes to huge sums of money, and it's not only WBAI that is having its, you know, ongoing financial crisis of the 47 years that I've been working here, but it's also Pacifica, the foundation itself. But right now, it's us, man, because we're moving. And what we need you to do is to become a member of WBAI. There are three things you can do. One, just call up 212-209-2950 and make a pledge of $25. Bingo, you're a member of WBAI. Call up and become a WBAI buddy, a BAI buddy. That instead of $25 a year, hey, pay $10 a month. sounds like less money, doesn't it? I don't know if it sounds like less, but the point is that it brings us far more money, not just $120 a year, but it gives us a promise of future incoming funds. And that's actually very, very important to us. It's more important in some ways, I believe, to get a BAI buddy at $10 a month than it is to get somebody to donate $120 a year, which, by the way, we wouldn't turn down. But for $60, if you call now for $60 and ask for the Hour of the Wolf movie review premium by dialing 212-209-2950, you will get all the movie reviews that Dan Persons and those before him. I'll try to find a Paul Wonder to throw in there as well for the sake of nostalgia. And you will get a CD filled with MP3 files of WBAI, but specifically Hour of the Wolf movie reviews. 212-209-2950. Again, did I mention it's 212-209-2950? Dan, what's that phone number?
212-209. My brain is drifting.
2950. Yeah.
212-209-2950.
Yes, everybody get a tattoo, by the way. T-shirts are nice, but tattoos last longer. Of course, we'll change the phone number right after you get the tattoo. But for now,
they actually require you to get the tattoo if you're going to guest on the show, so I had to get mine already.
Yeah, exactly. And, oh, God, I just thought of a pun, and I would get in trouble with the FCC involving tats. Involving tats. You know, what do you get for tats? Never mind.
Okay.
You get this for tats. Anyway. Good iced coffee around the corner from here, by the way. There are places that are open near here. It's a neighborhood. CCNY, you're on top of a hill in this tremendous building that's basically closed at night. Here, we're in a neighborhood with good iced coffee. And the downstairs, when is finished, is an actual cafe.
Hmm.
So, you know, welcome one and all to 388 Atlantic Avenue, and this is the first Hour of the Wolf in this location. But I'll save that for about 15 minutes from now, because that will be when Hour of the Wolf would normally begin. Right now, you would be listening to Kathy Davis and Paulette Spencer, normally. But for now, we're here at... with a Hour of the Wolf special. What movies are you most looking forward to this summer?
The big summer movie that I think I'm most looking forward to is Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
Which
is really odd, because that opens in December. So,
But that's okay. But why is there reason to believe that that will be any good? I mean, let's face it, Star Wars, you know, I didn't love Return of the Jedi. I thought that Phantom Menace stunk. Mm-hmm. I thought that the second film had some interesting effects, but that's about it. And I thought that Episode 3 was quite good. But the first movie, the one that was called Star Wars, it wasn't called A New Hope. I saw it about 10 times in the theater when it was just called Star Wars. And then I saw it another 20 times after it became Star Wars A New Hope. That movie, the way I like to describe it is people remember that movie similar to the same way that they remember the Kennedy assassination. That...
Well, there's good reason for that. It is the dividing line. It is while Jaws is sort of responsible for the introduction of the summer blockbuster, it was Star Wars that actually set the template for what a summer blockbuster was.
And for what a modern science fiction, I should say, science fantasy movie is about, which is really the genre that they have in the summer. It's not science fiction generally, with the exception of Gravity.
And you asked me why I would think this film would be any better, and I will...
Given the track record,
You've sort of answered it. Given the track record, can you imagine it getting any worse?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Easily, I can.
I've read
too much fanfic.
Well, that's a whole other level of professionalism or expertise. You know, coming from a big studio, coming from actually the guy who created the films to begin with. I mean, the prequel episodes, and I agree with you. Well, no, I don't agree with you in this. In the prequel episodes, I think the second one is the best of them. Is actually pretty enjoyable.
It's enjoyable, yeah, but it's not memorable.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I remember were really the droids.
None of them are memorable.
No, the third one is very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. The battle at the volcano. Mm-hmm. And I've only seen the film once, and I remember that. And I remember a lot of what leads up to that. And the funeral for that little girl from The Professional.
Yeah, that's true.
And all that stuff. No, I actually found that film enjoyable. My opinion, junk the first two movies, condense them, put them into, make them the first half hour of episode three. Cut the chaff down from episode three a little so it comes out to the same length.
Yeah.
At about 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And you could put...
Web.
Yeah, you could do that you could do that entire film, all three films, in under 3 hours.
The web teams with recuts.
Yeah, it does, but I mean professional.
Yeah.
I mean, good. Not the web teams with recuts. I'm talking about, come on, guys, between the former Lucasfilms and now Disney, with Kathleen Kennedy and those people in charge of the whole thing. You mentioned Jaws. Well, it's in the same hands as Jaws was. Point that out.
But you know what I was saying was, to follow up on my first comment on that, while I don't consider J.J. Abrams an infallible god in the industry, he still, I think, has demonstrated his chops. I'm, I guess, in the minority, but I actually did like what he did with the Star Trek films.
I thought the Star Trek films were great until you thought about them.
Well, they may not have held up to analysis all that much, but they were entertaining.
I had a great time, especially watching the first.
Yeah.
What
I found fascinating about the Trek fanship was that they seem to be saying, how dare he make these films entertaining?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
First of all, his casting was impeccable.
Yeah.
The little twists and the really, really clever idea of, oh, by the way, folks, for those of you who treat Trek as holier than thou, so do I, and welcome to the alternate universe. And he pulled that little card trick off, the little three-card Monty. He did a lovely job.
Yeah.
Just don't think about it.
I will say this. I was royally cheesed off at what he pulled in that first film. I said, I watched, when that happened, I was sitting in the theater, I said, wait a minute, what about A Mock Time? What about Journey to Babylon? Oh, this is bull stuff, you know? I essentially rejected it when I first saw it in the film, and I only came to it, I only came around to it later on.
Okay, yeah, I can see that, but I sort of knew going in that this wasn't Star Trek, that mm-hmm. this was alternate universe Star Trek, and I just threw it away there, and I bought it as that. He made it actually rather clear. There's only one thing that was missing from that film that I think would have improved it greatly, and that is the rumors were that he was... trying to use the guardian of the time gate
mm-hmm.
to put Spock through, thereby also from the city on the edge of forever, thereby also bringing back echoes of a classic Trek mm-hmm. thing. And for legal reasons, they stayed away from that. This is the rumor that I have heard.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go into it beyond that. And that would have made it more palatable. And for the second film, as far as I'm concerned, I thought that Benedict Cumberbatch made a lovely villain, but his name should never have been Khan. The character should never have been Khan. In fact, I'll tell you, I've said it on the air before, who he should have been.
Go ahead.
Flynn. Let's try your Trek trivia out now. You remember Flynn?
Flynn, the
character
Kurt's nemesis.
Absolutely.
From the Academy.
That's right. In an episode written by Theodore Sturgeon, as I recall. Yes, and what's the name of that one with the rabbit? Shore Leave.
Shore Leave. Yeah, I was going to say This Side of Paradise, which is another.
No, it was Shore Leave.
Yeah.
By the way, R.I.P. to Yeoman Rand, who died this week.
True. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, thought I'd just mention it since we're talking Trek. But had we simply made it that this guy was like thrown out of the Academy because of Kirk, and therefore had it in for Kirk, the movie would have worked so much better.
You see.
And I think all the fanboys and girls would have been going, yes, Flynn, why Khan?
I was glad it was Khan. I think
then recast it.
An interesting take on both on Space Seed and Wrath of Khan.
Yes, but then in that case, it's not Benedict Cumberbatch. you know, this is an Indian fellow. He's also not Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
This is not Indian, but subcontinental. It's a subcontinental character. Mm. So that's... That was my big problem with that movie.
In any case, getting back to
the 2015.
Right, yeah, 2015. Answering your question, and then we'll get on to the actual summer stuff, is that I think there is reason for cautious optimism with episode 7, you know, whereas there wasn't particularly... I didn't feel the same way even before The Phantom Menace debuted. I didn't feel as optimistic as I do about this, you know. And granted, you can't really trust the trailers because trailers will lie, but I see hopeful things even in the trailers, so...
What the trailers tell us is that they're spending a lot of money on the CGI, and that
here's what they're doing is that they're doing it right. Yes, there will be CG, and they will spend a lot of money on that, but they're also spending a lot of money on practical effects.
Yes.
And I think one of the great things...
No, I mean, that's wonderful and that's great. Now they need a script, then they need acting, and then they need a director, and they need a premise that pulls you into that universe, and that universe is going to have more episodes than there are in the Marvel universe.
Abrams can do well with all of that. He doesn't always do well with all of that, but he can, and that's what I'm putting my faith in.
He gets, and let me throw this word out, he gets lost. I didn't get lost at all. He got lost. He lost his way in Alias. He even lost his way in Felicity. Actually, the end of Felicity was much, much better than the beginning of it. Haven't watched Fringe. But he loses his way. And he doesn't have continuity from one film or one television project to the next. So that's my fear, that we're going to get these throwaways. Mm-hmm. And that's bad enough, the kind of throwaways that we get in the Marvel Universe.
I'm going to worry about the spin-offs and the side projects as they come along. Right now, sort of like eye on the prize. It's that first film, and hopefully that film is going to set the tone and the template for what will follow. I think, what Disney has been doing so far with Star Wars Rebels, have you seen that, by the way?
I've watched moments of it. It did not pull me in.
I think it's certainly better than any of the prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Episodes have been, and
it's not saying a lot.
Good on character. It's nicely written. The animation is actually very good, and far better than the CG animated Star Wars.
Is that the one that Gennady Tarkovsky is working on?
That was Tartakovsky worked on the original Clone Wars 2D animated episodes, and then they went to CG animation.
Because I want him back on Powerpuff Girls. I love Powerpuff Girls.
I want him off Hotel Transylvania too.
God.
So he's already finished with that. I saw an interesting
thing. I don't want anybody on Hotel Transylvania.
We're going way far afield on that. But one of the leaked Sony memos was about Tartakovsky leaving the Popeye film that Sony is supposedly doing. And there was a memo from one exec to another talking about the fact that Tartakovsky was really being an asset with Hotel Transylvania 2. And in dealing with Adam Sandler and his notes on animation, and that sort of blew my mind.
Yeah, right?
Adam Sandler is calling the shots on animation.
On anything.
That's true, too. That's true, too.
I mean, Adam Sandler, as far as I'm concerned, shouldn't be calling the shots on Adam Sandler.
He's actually much better off when he doesn't.
Well, exactly.
As an example, Punch Drunk Love.
Yes. The only example.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Let me mention, by the way, because it is after 1:30, that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial radio at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. This is Hour of the Wolf. I am Jim Freund. With me is Dan Persons. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, can I talk about a few more immediate releases, since that's what we're supposed to be talking
about?
That I've got some cautious optimism for. The first one that I'm really hoping is going to be good is Tomorrowland.
Oh, yes, I am extremely hopeful for that one.
For a number of reasons. The big one, first off, is that Brad Bird is involved with it. And
Brad Bird, as in The Incredibles, as in even Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
But, you know...
And George Clooney hasn't chosen a bad script in years.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's interesting because, I mean, they are stating specifically that this is supposed to be a more optimistic view of the future, and so it hoes closer to what Walt Disney wanted, like the vision of the future to be. And you've got to think about
this. And people don't realize it's not just a title. This is, you know, Tomorrowland is a section of Disneyland, not Disney World, Disneyland, and that's what the movie relates to.
And before they camped it up and Flash Gordoned it up in the theme parks and made it sort of this sort of campy, Buck Rogers.
Yeah, which I wouldn't know because I haven't. I was at the theme park for about 20 minutes once.
So basically, you got into the main gate and then left.
I got into the main gate. There was nobody there. I did the Alice in Wonderland cups, and I did Captain EO with Michael Jackson. And then it closed. I was there the first day of the fall where they cut down to closing at dusk.
Oh.
And I only got there at about 6 p.m. I knew nothing about. I knew so little about L.A. I took a cab there.
this is a whole other story. This is a whole other.
It gets better from there. I'll tell it very fast. I went from there to. I didn't know where to go, so I just said I went to the airport. Because it was a free shuttle bus to the airport, got into another cab, and said the only address I know, because I watch Warner Brothers cartoons, Hollywood and Vine, which is like a cesspit. And from there, I walked down the street singing Hollywood Boulevard to myself from the Kinks while I was going walking down the path and looking at the stars. And I look up and I'm in front of whatever ethnic theater it was at the time, the Egyptian, the Chinese theater, whatever it was. And across the street at the Masonic Temple was this huge banner saying Twilight Zone. So I go there, and they are putting the star for Rod Serling into the ground. And I was there, by the way, for corporate purposes. I was working for Citicorp doing computer networking, basically. And so I was there, this is what, it's like, okay, Jim, you've just worked X many hours on blah, blah, blah. What are you doing now? I'm going to Disney World. And this is what I did when Disneyland closed, as I went there. And there, Carol Serling was talking and doing an acceptance. I look around, and around me are Poole Anderson, Gordon R. Dixon, Harlan Ellison, all these great, wonderful science fiction writers who I know from conventions, and one of them turns around and looks at me and says, "Oh, hi, Jim." Like I was supposed to be there. So that's my Disneyland story. Oh, P.S., I got to go to a Hollywood party, a Beverly Hills party afterward, where Harrison Ford attended, among others.
Fantastic.
I got the whole nine yards in one evening. Go on.
I'm sorry. When was that? What year was that?
Seventies. Eighties.
Eighties.
Late '80s.
Late '80s. Probably it was before they had redesigned Tomorrowland anyway. But
I wouldn't have seen it in either case.
The thing about
Captain EO might have been in there.
And how far? Really, when was the last time that a science fiction film was genuinely optimistic about the future? I was trying to think of this, you know, and I was thinking, you know...
It was a Georges Méliès film.
Yeah. Well, I think a little later than that.
Okay, Things to Come?
You know, when we got into things like Planet of the Apes may have been the dividing line of that. 2001 may have been the last film that was in its own, perhaps a tongue-in-cheek way, optimistic.
I would say awe-inspiring. I wouldn't say optimistic, but awe-inspiring closing, yeah.
Yeah, but at least there was sort of this hope of humankind advancing and being reborn. And then we get into like Planet of the Apes, mm-hmm. Soylent Green, Logan's Run, you know, and basically science fiction film after that, there isn't really much evidence of optimism about the future.
Now, I would say that's true not just of science fiction film, but of science fiction in general. I mean, we were no longer getting the fun cleverness of Douglas Adams. Terry Pratchett was the exception, and that's fantasy anyway. Very divorced from. He wrote science fiction as well, and actually his science fiction was rather dour.
And by the way, just for the record, I'm not trying to appeal to the sad puppy contingent out here. I'm just making an observation. I'm not.
Most listeners have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, seriously.
And I just as soon keep it that way.
Okay, fair enough. There's a whole. Can we just say there's a whole big thing about a certain.
There are two groups. One is a libertarian group. The other is a right wing group that have taken over the nominations. Bought basically nominations in the Hugo Awards because, as I've said on the air for so many times, the Hugo Awards are the People's Choice Award. All you have to do is pay for it and you get in.
Yeah.
And people got in. It's not the first time. I love to remind people of this. It's not the first time the nominations have been bought. There was a time when a particular religious organization out in California bought many memberships, but they were caught because they used serially numbered money orders. And so those were all disqualified. But this is basically putting the Hugos into a political slate. And there are the sad puppies and the angry puppies, and there's
right.
This.
And they're, at least their high-profile argument is that there weren't enough old-school, just good old-fashioned science fiction stories.
Which is, by the way, nonsense and has been disproven.
Yeah, I agree with that.
George Martin on his blog, you know, gave the exact instances in which they are just full of something.
Yeah.
It's what they're saying isn't even true. So who cares?
Full of succotash, we could say.
Yeah.
In any case, so Tomorrowland.
Suffering succotash.
Tomorrowland is like the first film that I'm really looking forward to.
And it does look optimistic.
Yeah. So I'm hoping for that. And then we get to, and we can go over like the other films, but the other one that I'm really looking forward to is June 19th, Inside Out.
Yes.
Which is Pixar's return after a 2-year absence and hopefully some very serious...